I think the main message in the movie is to be you and to be yourself and to be true to who you are.
It's really amazing because you really don't see this kind of film coming out of Asia.
I was trying to write a screenplay about a relationship that had a really complicated power dynamic.
I'm noticing in gay films that there's a real drive to become acceptable to the culture at large. I don't personally have this agenda at all.
This film festival of LGBT in LA has really been a trip.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Hungary's High Court axes age of consent discrimination, Brazilian judges recognize a bi-national lesbian couple's French registration, and a whirlwind tour of what's festively out on film. All that and more this week.
I'm going to be doing a photo shoot with a live porno model.
I've constructed a temple to the cult of femininity.
Because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Dean Elzinger.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 7th, 2002. Hungary's constitutional court this week struck down the nation's discriminatory age of consent law, effective immediately. Until now, paragraph 199 provided for up to 3 years' imprisonment for consensual homosexual acts if one party was below the age of 18, while the age of consent for heterosexual acts was only 14. The court called that discrimination arbitrary and unjustifiable, and its ruling serves to establish the age of consent at 14 for both homosexual and heterosexual acts. The legal challenge of the law's constitutionality was initiated in 1993 by Hungary's Lambda Budapest Gay Society, Homeros Society, and Hungarian Jewish Lesbian and Gay Group. According to the civil rights group Habeas Corpus, at least 16 men had been sentenced to prison under the law over the last 9 years. The European Parliament had formally called for equalization of the age of consent in Hungary on 3 occasions. ILGA, the International Lesbian and Gay Association, applauded the ruling and hopes it will spur similar action by Bulgaria's parliament, where the European community's last discriminatory age of consent law will be debated this month. But ILGA also noted that an earlier Hungarian constitutional court decision upheld a prohibition against those under the age of 18 joining groups campaigning for lesbi-gay rights.
A move to equalize the age of consent in the Australian state of New South Wales won't be debated until after next year's state elections. Instead of being part of a current debate on amendments to the state's Crimes Act, the bill was sent to the Upper House's Social Issues Committee by Attorney General Bob Debus. Debus says he personally supports equalizing the age of consent for homosexual acts, now 18 years, with that for heterosexual acts, 16. But he believes the bill would not be passed in its current form and hopes the committee will deal with what he called genuine concerns about whether such a bill provides adequate safeguards for children.
Protecting children was inevitably the rhetoric used by Baroness Janet Young in Britain's House of Lords as she led the Conservative Party in opposing equalization of the age of consent and every other move to equality for gays and lesbians over the last 3 decades. Young, a cabinet member under Margaret Thatcher and the first woman ever to serve as leader of the House of Lords, died this week at the age of 75. Mourned by the Tories' parliamentary leader Ian Duncan Smith as a principled campaigner of courage, conviction, and tenacity, veteran gay and lesbian civil rights activist Peter Tatchell reviled Young for having poisoned society with prejudice and intolerance, and predicted that future historians will rank her alongside the defenders of apartheid. She supported homophobic discrimination to the last. Young had been working to block the Labour government's bill to open adoption to unmarried couples, including same-gender couples, and had previously succeeded in blocking a Labour move to repeal Section 28, which prohibits local governments from devoting resources to promotion of homosexuality or the presentation of same-gender couples as pretend marriages.
But this week marked the first anniversary of London's partnership registry, the first of its kind in the UK. 314 London couples, most of them gays and lesbians, have signed up at the registry, even though it has no legal standing. Also in the first year, 3 lesbian and 2 gay male couples went on to deregister. Several other cities in Britain have or will be setting up similar registries, and a civil partnerships bill extending legal recognition to gay and lesbian couples will be reintroduced in the Parliament later this year.
A panel of judges in Brazil has recognized a binational lesbian couple's French registered partnership for purposes of immigration. The Brazilian woman met her French partner in France and was granted residency there after they contracted a legal partnership. The French partnerships, known as PACs, Pacts of Civil Solidarity, carry many of the rights and obligations of marriage, including immigration rights. Then the couple decided to move to Brazil, which does not have legal same-gender partnerships, a bill to create them having stalled in the parliament for years. But a panel of 17 Brazilian judges has concluded that the relationship should be recognized based on the principle of international reciprocity.
In Canada this week, a second provincial superior court ruled it unconstitutional to deny legal marriage to gays and lesbians. Quebec Superior Court Justice Louise Lemelin followed a July ruling in Ontario as she found in favor of Montreal marriage activists Michael Hendricks and René Leboeuf, a couple of 30 years standing. In June, Quebec's legislature approved a bill to create civil unions that extend all the provincial benefits of legal marriage to gay and lesbian couples, but some aspects of marriage are controlled by Canadian federal law, which is restricted to a man and a woman. Justice Lemelin noted that those civil unions are not equivalent to marriage, as she decided that the heterosexual definition of marriage imposes a discriminatory distinction in excluding couples of the same sex. The Law Commission of Canada has reached the same conclusion. Justice Lemelin recommended modifying marriage laws to define marriage as between two persons, but said that the court prefers to leave the initiative to the legislators. The Canadian government arranged for a parliamentary committee to consider and report on the issue following the Ontario ruling, which allowed 2 years for legislators to act. The federal government has also filed an appeal to the Ontario ruling, but has not yet announced whether it will appeal the Quebec decision. Last year, a British Columbia court found that marriage discrimination against gays and lesbians is justified.
In the U.S., the city of Philadelphia is appealing a judgment last week that struck down the city's life partnership ordinance. In filing its appeal to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, the city is also asking for a stay of last week's Commonwealth Court ruling in order to allow city workers' registered partners to continue to receive spousal health benefits while the matter is adjudicated. The Commonwealth Court had agreed with a right-wing group's challenge to the hard-won ordinance, declaring that the city had usurped the state's power to define marriage.
A U.S. federal court has upheld students' right to have a gay-straight alliance group as an official club on their public high school campus. Then-junior Amy Obermeyer applied last year to create the GSA at Franklin Central High School in Indianapolis, Indiana, as a safe forum for lesbi-gay students and their non-gay allies to discuss sexual orientation issues. The school denied it, suggesting changing the name to the Diversity Club and the content to include a broad range of minority issues, ostensibly out of concern that GSA members would be targeted for harassment. To the Indiana Civil Liberties Union, that was diluting the message of the GSA, and the group helped the students to file suit. Last week, U.S. District Judge Larry McKinney ordered the school to immediately reinstate the GSA for the current school year. He wrote that the Constitution does not permit government officials, even if well-intentioned government officials, to decide how individuals may best express themselves in a public forum. The Franklin Township Schools District will appeal the decision since no application for a GSA was filed for this year, and most of the GSA's original supporters have graduated.
New Jersey school districts will be required to create clear policies against bullying, harassment, and intimidation under a law signed this week by Governor James McGreevy. The measure's 7 specified protected categories include gender and sexual orientation, yet it was passed unanimously by both houses of the state legislature in June. The districts will each create their own policies, including a definition of harassment, rules for reporting and investigating complaints, and school responses when complaints are confirmed, but there are state guidelines to ensure some consistency. GLSEN, the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, says that only 7 other states and Washington, D.C. explicitly protect students from harassment based on their sexual orientation and/or gender identity.
And finally, this week, the New York Times published its first wedding-style announcement for a same-gender couple. In more than 500 words, with a photo in the wedding celebrations section, the distinguished newspaper announced the religious commitment ceremony and pending Vermont civil union of financier Daniel Gross and public affairs consultant Stephen Goldstein. As the item recounted, it was a newspaper that first brought them together in October 1992, when Goldstein responded to Gross' personal ad in the Washington, D.C. city paper. That ad read, "Nice Jewish boy, 5 feet 8 inches, 22, funny, well-read, dilettantish, self-deprecating, Ivy League, the kind of boy mom fantasized about." Gross's own mom said the following month, "You seem like you're in love." When Gross said, "I am, his name is Stephen," she said, "Oy." While it took a little time, the Times said that both sets of parents now support the relationship, and the paper described them as it usually does, parents of traditional brides and grooms.
That's NewsWrap for the week ending September 7th, 2002, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Dean Elzinga.
Salut tout le monde, ici c'est Christophe Vix de Radio FG 98.2 de Paris. Et vous écoutez This Way Out, le programme de radio international d'information lesbien et gay. You are listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio program.
There will be over 100 gay and lesbian film festivals around the globe this year. From Baltimore to Buenos Aires, Tokyo to Tampa, the annual film festival has become a much-anticipated event on the queer calendar. Los Angeles celebrated the 20th anniversary of Outfest this year, and This Way Out's Steve Pride was on the scene for this behind-the-screen report.
While these days there are gay and lesbian film festivals all over the globe, the largest of them, appropriately enough, is still in Hollywood. This year's Outfest boasted 241 films from 30 countries, shown over 12 days. And it was possible to even have a great time without setting foot in a theater. For the second year in a row, the festival transformed a notorious motel off Sunset into a world-class performance art installation called Platinum Oasis.
Welcome to Platinum Oasis here at the historic Coral Sands.
This is Bruce LaBruce at Platinum Oasis. I'm going to be doing a photo shoot with a live porno model who's wearing a pig mask with a suit, which is sort of based on the famous poster for the Pasolini film Porcile. And then as the night progresses, it's like the bloody crime scene, and he's going to be getting bloodier and bloodier. The room will get bloodier as the night goes on.
Hi, my name is Catherine Opie, and basically I just thought it'd be fun to do a little lesbian separatist tea party and have high tea here and invite Dykes in for conversation and food.
This looks like great food. I'll be a lesbian. Introduce yourself and
Jason Marston.
Tell me about the room.
It's called Pasolini Sucks. It's an installation piece. It's interactive. It's plywood cubicles with holes cut at waist level.
And why would that be?
I'm Pandora Young, and I've constructed a temple to the cult of femininity.
Is it the only one in LA?
Absolutely not. Although most of them are more underground, they don't really acknowledge their true nature.
My name's Stuart Timmons. I'm on the board of One Institute and Archives. This room is filled with some of the original artwork and some of the duplicate books and magazines from One Archives, which is the largest LGBT records collection under one roof. The aesthetic we're going for is sort of an old Queen's fantasy.
My name's Will Monroe. I'm an artist from Toronto. This, I guess, is a site-specific installation for my underwear in the Coral Sands Hotel. This is some of my collection of hand-sewn underwear that I make. I have probably about 200 at home.
My name is Slava. I'm a Russian writer and artist. This series of prints and found images mostly from Russian press. I have 6 books published in Russian, and I was in Bruce Lee Bruce's movie Skin Flick.
My name's Michelle Carr, and I'm the director of the Velvet Hammer Burlesque, and this is our room, Velvet Satyricon.
You guys were here last year.
Yes, we were. Last year, our room was called the Velvet Hammer in their natural habitat, and it was a backstage setup, and we just continually, for 18 hours, got dressed and undressed and made ourselves up all night long.
I do that sometimes.
But of course, the real reason to have a film festival is to watch a lot of movies. This year's batch included several documentaries about commitment and family, the best of which was called Daddy and Papa.
I'm Johnny Simons.
And I'm William Rogers.
We started the film when a friend of ours, Kelly, announced one night when we were having dinner with him that he was going to be adopting two kids. He's a single gay man. He lives in the middle of the Castro and comes from a fairly conservative Catholic family. And I thought, he's going to be on an interesting journey and I want to follow him. So I asked if I could, you know, do some filming. And as I was beginning that process and then found a couple other families that I was interested in filming too, all of that really came first. And then somewhere along the line, William and I decided that we wanted to adopt as well. And I felt like, oh, geez, I'm filming all these other families. It's only fair to turn the camera on us as well. So I did. And what I realized is that I could film a lot more of what was going on in our lives because, you know, I was there all the time with the camera. And so we just got more footage of ourselves, more intimate moments, more of the whole story. And so that ended up becoming a big part of the final film.
I definitely always wanted children. But I think for me, when I actually saw that Kelly was able to adopt, it was the first time that it sort of clicked in my head that it was a possibility. You know, there's always the notion, if you're gay, oh my God, you're not going to have children. And the sort of the stereotypical response by mothers is, but now I'm not going to have grandchildren. And the fact is that I think watching other people adopt helped me to realize that we actually could do it. And we started fairly soon into the process after Johnny started thinking about making the film.
My name is Deborah Dixon. I'm the director of Ruthie and Connie, Every Room in the House. What do you need to make a great film? You need a very good story. You need great characters. You want people who are going to give you access and are spontaneous. And Ruthie and Connie, I have all of the, you know, above.
My name is Connie Kurtz, and I'm feeling real good being here in L.A.
My name is Ruth Berman, and I'm Connie Kurtz's lover, and this film festival of LGBT in L.A. has really been a trip, a wonderful trip.
Yeah.
We're Hollywood, we're movie stars on Sunset Strip.
Or do we strip on Sunset?
Whatever you want to do, babe.
Ruthie had two children. I was having my first child. And we were friends, and we shared babysitting, exchanging babysitting. And
I didn't feel as if this was a lesbian relationship. I was like in another time and space that when my husband called me a lesbian, I wanted the ground to open up and for me to be swallowed by the ground.
We came together as lovers in 1975, and we moved in together. I don't know how easier it is to come out, but certainly the resources today are more than ever. The visibility is more than ever. Hopefully that's a sign of okayness
and
the outside.
And the young people have to know that we do have a history, that it just didn't come to them, and that they have to participate in the present and the future to maintain what we have gotten. As Connie and I are standing on the shoulders of many gays and lesbians, they are standing on ours.
Hi, I'm Margaret Cho.
Hello, this is Edmund White.
Hi, I'm comedian Bob Smith.
Hi, I'm Kate Clinton.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin.
Hi, I'm Clive Barker.
This is Judy Shepard.
Hello, I'm Scott Thompson.
Hi, I'm David Sedaris.
Hi, this is Jeff Straker.
Hi, this is Chastity Bono, and you're listening to
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
This Way Out. The International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine.
And now back to Outfest 2002, as we look at some of the gay and lesbian films that may soon be at a theater or film festival near you.
Hi, I'm Christian Taylor.
And I'm Lindy Heyman, directors of Showboy.
Directors of Showboy.
Co-directors of Showboy.
It's about a writer who gets fired from his career as a TV writer in Hollywood.
We should say he's a writer on 6 Feet Under.
And ends up...
He's being pursued by a British documentary crew doing a fluff piece, behind-the-scenes piece, And as they're following him, they overhear him get fired. And in pursuit of their interview to finish the piece, they have to follow him to Las Vegas, where he's actually becoming a showboy.
I'm playing myself, but a sort of heightened, bizarre caricature of myself.
My name is Laura Nix, and I'm the director of The Politics of Fur and also the documentary, Whether You Like It or Not, The Story of Hedwig. I started working on The Politics of Fur 5 years ago, and I finished it this year. I was trying to write a screenplay about a relationship that had a really complicated power dynamic, and I, you know, I'm just drawing some of my own experiences, actually, and from those of other people that I knew. And I wanted to work with the genre of melodrama. I got really, really psyched about watching different kinds of films when I was in grad school. I was watching a lot of Fassbender. I was watching Douglas Sirk, Almodovar, Robert Aldrich. And I wanted to do something with characters that were kind of archetypal female characters. Whether you like it or not, the story of Hedwig is about the creation of Hedwig and the Angry Inch, starting all the way with John Cameron Mitchell and Stephen Trask playing at Squeeze Box in 1994, which was a kind of underground nightclub in Soho where Hedwig began, and following the genesis of that character all the way from its beginnings in this tiny rock club to him winning at Sundance, and everything that happens in between.
Hi, my name is Sherman Alexi. I'm the writer and director of The Business of Fancy Dancing. The Business of Fancy Dancing tells the story of Seymour Palatkin, a Spokane Indian who grew up on the Spokane Indian Reservation, who becomes a very famous poet and also comes out as a gay man in his early 20s during college. And the death of a childhood friend on the reservation brings him back to the reservation to interact with his childhood friends and also with his last girlfriend before he came out, Agnes. So it's a social, gender, sexuality, drama, comedy. My day job is I'm a novelist, poet, and short story writer. My first book was published, a book of poems called The Business of Fancy Dancing, in January 1992. So I've been a full-time professional writer for 10 years. First movie we made was called Smoke Signals, which Miramax released in 1998, which I wrote and produced.
Hi, I'm Miles Swain. I'm the writer-director of The Trip. This isn't an attempt to be a crossover film. I really wanted a film that teenagers and even adults could take their parents or some relative or friend that they're coming out to see the film. Because I love Trick and Broken Hearts Club and all those movies, but I mean, it doesn't really show the breeders anything about where we came from, who our leaders are, who our villains were, what we went through, and all that. I think the main message in the movie is to be you and to be yourself and to be true to who you are. I spent many years of my life not being true to myself, and I made a lot of mistakes, and I wish I hadn't. And I can't go back and I can't change things, but maybe this film can give somebody the courage to be who they truly are, because you're not really living life unless you're being true to what's inside.
My name is Duncan Roy, and my film is called AKA. My film is about a few years that I spent pretending to be somebody else before I went to prison at the age of 23. Obviously, when you start telling any of your true story, it's a difficult situation because sometimes people don't think it's a very sort of sympathetic character. And obviously, I'd like them to take away from the film the fact that sometimes we can do almost anything to hide the truth from ourselves and also to forgive ourselves for what's happened to us, I suppose, in some confessional way.
This is Marcus Hu from Strand Releasing. I'm co-president. Lan Yu is the story set in Beijing of a businessman who falls in love with a student, and the relationship begins in a sort of a relationship of trade, but develops into a very heartfelt relationship and one that is reciprocated in ways that are so romantic and so absolutely positive that it's really amazing. It's really amazing because you really don't see this kind of film coming out of Asia, let alone it comes from China. Lan Yu began as an internet novel, and it was circulated all around the internet in China. And the film is banned, and the concept of a gay love story in Beijing just wouldn't fly. So it had to be done very kind of undercover. So pretty much this entire film and the internet story itself has all been done undercover and just like in this underground gay world. people are passing around tapes. There's like group screenings where it's being shown. Stanley Kwan, the director, and the producer, Yang Ning, were telling me how they had to go and carry videos of it in these groups and organizations so they can actually see it projected on a television screen. We have five films at Outfest and five films that have been going around the gay film festival circuit. They include Lan Yu, directed by Stanley Kwan, Hush, which is directed by Ryusuke Hashiguchi, and that's a film about two gay Japanese guys living in Tokyo who want to have a child. We have All the Queen's Men, which stars Matt LeBlanc and Eddie Izzard, and it's a World War II comedy, sort of like Guns of Navarone meets Some Like It Hot. We also have His Secret Life, which is the follow-up film to Furzan Özpetek's film Steam, which we also released. And we also have another film that's been playing the festival circuit called Smokers Only, directed by Veronica Chun. And that has been going out around the country as well in film festival circuits and opens in November. And we also have The Coquettes, which is playing now in theaters all around the country. And I think we've been really fortunate. I've been really proud to see that our films are supported by the community so well. And, you know, it was really kind of an honor to get the Outfest Lifetime Achievement Award this year. And I was really, really, really pleased about that. And I couldn't be more proud.
Hi, this is Everett Lewis.
Last, but certainly not least, the director of Luster, a sexy film about a blue-haired skateboarding poet and his circle of friends.
What I'm noticing in sort of gay films, that there's a real drive to become acceptable to the culture at large. I don't personally have this agenda at all. I think being gay is very special, and I like that it isn't acceptable exactly, that it's something else. What I would like, I guess ideally, is for people to make things that are honest to them instead of trying to please so much an audience. Because when you start including all these people, obviously you're not thinking about the project, you're thinking about an audience. When I was writing the script, I'm like, I'm going to create a whole gay world. Because actually all the characters are based on someone I've met or know. And a lot of the things that are in the script, I've heard them say. That's a goal I have now in film, is to create a world that I would be really happy in. A really vivid, interesting gay world that's where people support each other and are friends, and the gay lesbian battle isn't even happening, you know? I mean, they're all supportive, and it's great, you know? That would be a goal.
On top of its big yearly celebration, Outfest screens films every week in Los Angeles and has spawned Outfest San Diego, which now in its fifth year features 4 days of queer films at the end of September. For a list of other gay and lesbian film festivals around the world, point your internet browser to planetout.com. Click on Popcorn Q, then Film Festivals. For This Way Out, this has been Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Dean Elzinga, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambidge, Rex Walkner, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Alan Williams composed and conducted some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Arcus Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 4ZZZ Brisbane, Queensland, KVSC St. Cloud, Minnesota, WPKN Bridgeport, Connecticut, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody's going to stay tuned.